And good morning. Welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. Well, we're coming to you live this morning, May 30th, 2026. I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Jason, Will, everybody. Glad to be here.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning, fellas.
And Will, would you start us off with a word of prayer this morning, please, sir?
You bet. Father God in heaven, thank you, Lord, for this beautiful Saturday morning. And, Lord, thank you for the opportunity to fellowship with these men. I pray, oh God, that you'll bless this conversation, Lord, that it'll be pleasing to your ears, Lord, and it'll edify the remnant that are joining us this morning. And, Lord, in all things, we just ask for your guidance and the Holy Spirit's intervention, Lord, to give us the words that need to be said this morning. We ask it in your name. Amen.
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 Well, there is an awful lot going on in the world. Any particular place you guys want to start this morning?
Middle East has been busy. Considering there's a ceasefire, there sure has been a lot of things blowing up and a lot of people getting killed.
Yeah, in what's not a war, but is a war, but yeah. Let's start there.
Right.
Why don't you tell us what's going on? What's the latest?
Well, there's several things that's going on that I find interesting. This one headline, Israel pounds southern Lebanon after declaring it a combat zone. I don't know if you guys had a chance to take a look at this or not, but, you know, this is in spite of, I guess you would say, peace efforts from the United States or whatever. Netanyahu's Israel just says, no, Lebanon has nothing to do with Iran. This is its own combat zone. And, boy, they just, they opened up, this week on Lebanon and just really, the pictures coming out of there is, drastic, to say the least. They really leveled a lot of buildings, and I was trying to get an actual total, but I think it was over 100 people. I'll just say this, that there's this one, according to Lebanon's health ministry, at least 3,213 people have been killed and 9,737 wounded since Israel launched its military operation in late February. If you go by their numbers, that's 12,000 casualties, which 3,000 of them were killed. That's a lot of folks. That's a lot of folks.
Yeah, I would say. I did look through some of that. One of the things I thought was interesting was the fact that the IDF was claiming that it had struck military buildings and command centers and locked sites allegedly used by Hezbollah in the Bekaa Valley in southern Lebanon area, or the Tyre district and all that. And I was like, they claimed that they had hit over 550 Hezbollah-linked targets since the beginning of the week. You know, if you start adding all these military targets up in Lebanon and in all the surrounding areas that they're supposedly hitting, it's just a wonder they ever survived at all. I mean, that's kind of satirical. You know, how in the world? That must have just been bristling with military activity all the way around them all the time. How did they manage to, you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, it's like,
I do, yeah.
It's like everywhere we look, there's just, yeah, it's just everywhere. And,
The matrix that Israel is using is if you have a Lebanese citizen that's in an open air market selling fruit, and they said, you know, I really don't like what Israel's doing, well, that becomes a military target.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I see it, Tim. I mean, if you speak out against Israel, then you become a legitimate military target. To Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I see it.
Yeah, you're now an enemy combatant, and the area
that's right
around you is designated as a combat zone, you know. So And then they will make it look like, I mean, there was some wording there in one of the articles that I was looking at, or some of the stuff I was reading, and they were talking about surgical strikes. And I was like, well, if that's their idea of a surgical strike, they must be, you know, they must be, you know, medical examiners or something doing autopsies. I mean, they're just cutting things apart all over the place.
Yeah, I don't want to be on the operating table if that's what they consider to be surgical. That's something.
Yeah.
I'll point out to you guys, you know, and you made mention of it, Tim, but this is a part that's kind of, and I may be reading into it too much, and you guys put me in my place if I am, but one of the things that's been interesting to me on these latest sites, attacks from Israel in Lebanon is, you know, you made mention of the city of Tyre, T-Y-R-E, Tim, and, you know, that is an ancient European city inside Lebanon. Like going back to medieval times and the Crusaders and that sort of thing. And that's something for our listeners to kind of delve into. Lebanon itself, the Lebanese people, they're heavily influenced by the European culture, especially the French, inside their country. And this was a pass-through country for a lot of Europeans that were going into the Middle East during the Crusades. And there is a ton of history in Lebanon dealing with our people, the European people. And it's interesting to me in this latest wave of attacks inside Lebanon, it to me appears as if Israel has targeted historical monuments and historical areas that tied our people to the Holy Land. I don't know if you guys are seeing that or not, but for example, there was a medieval castle, a European castle that was erected in Lebanon called the Beaufort Castle. And Beaufort in French just means beautiful fortress. And the Israelis leveled it this week. This was an ancient crusader castle that had been constructed by the European crusaders when they were going to fight Saladin over in Jerusalem. And I think it was about 1100 AD is when that castle was built, so it's about 1,000 years old. And it was on a protected historical site by the United Nations and UNESCO and all of this sort of stuff. And Israel targeted it, and it is nothing but rubble now. It's almost like they want to wipe our presence in the region out of people's memories. I don't know.
That's
what
I
think about that.
When I was trying to figure out why they blew up that castle or bombed it. And that's the only thing that I can think of. It's like they're just going after what you know, what our people have done, and they want to eliminate our presence in that land. And you know, plus it's something, anything like that has to do with our history or our people, they want to destroy it.
I think that's one reason why they've targeted the churches too.
Yeah,
in Lebanon and these ancient Christian areas. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm just, they have. And the other thing is Tyre's mentioned in the Bible. I mean, clear back in Joshua and,
absolutely.
You know, Second Samuel, and there's several mentions of it. But one of the things that's interesting is, that no one really understands is, and to me, this is like a telling point of who we are and who they are. But, Hiram, was the king of Tyre, and he sent when David was getting ready to build the temple and talking about it. You know, Solomon went to work on it. He sent cedar and artisans and everything else out to help him build that and to create it. Well, if you think about that, then they would be, what would you call that, an ally, I think. So, but they don't treat them like they're an ally. They don't care about that. They don't care about anything else. Their job is to just destroy and cover everything up like that. So they must not be those people, maybe. I mean, you know, if you,
there you go,
think your way through it. So anyway, just throwing it out for kind of like question. But, yeah, been around a long time.
I think, like Sherlock Holmes, Tim, that's a brilliant deduction. That is, that's how I see it, too. You know, we know, I mean, I'll just throw this out there for, just to say it. We know there's been a systematic effort through media, through textbooks, through the university system, through the public school system, whatever the mode, there's been a systematic effort to rewrite history. And I think this goes hand in glove with that of not only are they rewriting history, they're simply erasing it. They're just wiping it off the face of the earth. So, yeah, they're purging. There you go, Tim. They're not wanting, we're getting to the point of where they want the memory of what our people did to be wiped off the face of the earth. And that's what I think part of this campaign there and throughout these Middle Eastern countries that Lebanon is just on the forefront right now, that what Israel is doing is, this is more of a, this may be a bold statement, but I think this is a more of a war against our Lord than it is against these Middle Eastern countries. That may be a bold statement, but I really believe that this is Esau Edom living by the sword and doing everything they can to wipe away the memory of the true Israelite nation. That's my opinion.
That's a good point. So. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think you're right. Makes a lot of sense. We know that that's what they do. They're creatures of instinct, and I don't think they can help themselves. I think they're just going to keep doing it. It's like, well, there's a ceasefire going on, and then, you know, Benny comes out and says, we're going to take control, 70% control of the Gaza Strip. You know, they're just going to keep doing. They think they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof and just going to keep pounding away.
Wow. Yeah, there's Gaza again. Wondered what was going on over there, right? There it is. So, yeah, there. And the other thing is if we think about this, this expansion thing that they are talking about all the time from the Israelis. I mean, their idea of expansion is kind of what the rest of us would call total annihilation and destruction. You know, I mean, it's like they're not. It's more like they're leaking out of their containment zone than like they're expanding and making things better. So, yeah.
How big is Gaza Strip? Does anybody have any idea?
Is it 70 miles square, something like that? It's not a huge, area.
I didn't think it was, but I was just curious.
The days of wandering are no more. Let me see if I can find out while we talk how big Gaza are. Let's see. You know, something that that news headline you were talking about, Jason, as far as Netanyahu says they're going to take 70%. Heck, I thought they were pretty much in control of 100% of it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, what does that 70% mean? Does that mean they're going to start, like, building on 70% of it? Or what exactly does that mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah. Well, we all know that it's just like I've said it before, and this isn't maybe it's not nice, but it's fact. They don't make anything. They don't create anything. So what's the point? I mean, I just think that when the Bible talks about them not being asleep to destruction, you know, I think that's what we see. I think their idea of control is destroying it. So that's kind of my, that's kind of the way I look at it.
The Gaza Strip is 140 square miles.
Okay. So it's
there's
not, it's
million
not
people in there.
Not very big. How many people are in there?
They say that its population is over 2 million.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's a lot of people in a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely more than one person per square mile. Yeah. So
it is 25 miles long and 7.5 miles wide and 141 square miles total. That's a lot of folks.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, I'm just looking. You're right, Tim. It's the population density. Good gracious. Is 15,455 people per square mile.
Gee whiz, wow. That is a lot of people.
They got them stacked on top of each other.
So. No kidding. Wow. Did you guys see? Did y'all see that there is this leaked plan that ISIS militants from Syria are being armed up to be used in Iran?
No, but it doesn't surprise me. Didn't we talk about that early on?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense now why the guy who's running Syria is in Syria. So it's coming out that this was from earlier in the week, May 26th, this dropped. Jihadists are being moved from prisons in Syria to special camps in Iraq, and they're being trained up to be used as an insurgent force inside Iran.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yep. That's what is being put out there this week. I don't know. It's an interesting, they tried this at the beginning back in February. Remember, you know, they sent a bunch of guns into, the Kurdish region north of Iran. And they thought the Kurds would be an insurgent force that could be manipulated to be used as an invasion force in Iran. And what did the Kurds do? They just said, thanks for the guns and the ammo. We'll save these for later. And they didn't want to take part in it, you know? And, maybe this is plan B of all of these former ISIS members, or radical, Islamic folks that are in Syria that helped with the civil war of Syria. They got to have something to do, right? And you got to stop and think about it. If you're the new leader and you're wearing a suit and tie and you're visiting Donald Trump in the White House, you don't want all of these battle-hardened militant rebels sitting around twiddling their thumbs doing nothing inside your country, because they may just get the idea to overthrow you. So what do? You offer them and say, you know, I got all of these guys. They're just itching for a fight. Let's send them to Iran. That gets them out of your hair, takes the threat away from your country, and gives people like Israel, because you got to remember, Israel is controlling northern Syria. They've set up military bases there, and they were one of the ones that pushed for this new Syrian leader. you got a ready-made guerrilla force ready to hit the ground in Iran. And so don't be surprised if we see that in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Right. Wow. And it also, future tense-wise, it probably sets up the next enemy combatant that the State Department needs to worry about in the Middle East at some future date.
That's right.
You know. But,
that's right.
Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, this is old. Haven't we done this before? Oh, yeah, like over and over and over again and seen it kind of come out the same way. So
every time.
Hmm. Yeah. Jeez. That's
amazing.
It is. Wow.
I'll tell you another interesting one. And I don't know how interesting anybody else is going to think this is, but did you guys get a look at the it was a story off of Natural News, the headline, Secret Plan by the U.S. and Israel to Seize Al-Aqsa Mosque Custodianship from Jordan?
Yeah.
This is the Dome of the Rock.
Yeah.
You know, the
Dome of the Rock. Yeah, right. Yes.
Did y'all get a chance to take a look at that and read through that?
No, I didn't.
Basically, what it's saying is Jordan, so there, this is a highly contested little piece of real estate over there. You know, you got, supposedly this is the site of Solomon's Temple that was destroyed, and then the Muslims rebuilt this mosque there, this Al-Aqsa Mosque, what they call the Dome of the Rock. And for people listening, you've probably seen it. It's got the big gold dome on it there in Jerusalem. And anyways, through some treaties and negotiations over the years, Jordan is kind of like a third-party neutral custodian of this place. So it doesn't belong to Israel, and it doesn't belong to the Palestinians or anything like that. So Jordan kind of is the independent country. Well, supposedly behind the scenes, the United States and Israel are actively working to remove custodianship of Jordan, or from Jordan, and it will, and this is all being done by Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, and Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, and they're wanting to replace the Jordan, right, with a Israeli-created body that would declare the Al-Aqsa Mosque a multi-faith center, and this is according to the Middle East Eyes, an online newspaper. And under the proposed arrangements, the Jews would be granted equal access to the Muslim site and be formally allowed to conduct large group Jewish prayer. If they pull that off, there's going to be a bunch of pissed off Muslims. I don't even know how to describe that. I mean, that is going to be the Jews are not, I mean, maybe y'all know, I don't think the Jews are even allowed to set foot there, are they? No. Tim, do you know?
No. As far as I know, they're not. Yeah, it's an excuse.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah. Definitely not to promote any of their religious dogma or views or anything like that. So, and I don't.
Right.
Yeah, they're. No, I don't think they're allowed in. At least the last time I knew about it, and I also thought it was interesting that under the agreement of this, arrangement that they were talking about, the fact that Israel would have major say in who the, what do they call them, imams are that they put in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to be controlling the day-to-day operations and things like that. So. But they, you know, it's kind of, non-Muslims are permitted to visit the Dome of the Rock, but they can't pray there. So
right. No religious.
Yeah, it simply would be like a tour. You know, you can view it, but you can't demonstrate, you can't pray, you can't do any of those sort of things. So, and as usual, you know, it all occurs to me throughout all these things we always see is it's like you just can't tell the Israelis no. I mean, if you tell them no on anything, they're like petulant children. That's exactly what they're going to do, no matter what.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. You know, no, you can't run this. No, this is not yours. You know, or this belongs to someone else. Just like petulant children, they take it and they break it. You know, that's kind of what they do. They don't want what they've got. They want what everybody else has, and they're more than happy to break it and leave them with nothing. And never returning. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're exactly right. It's the attitude, you know, so many times throughout history, you can think it's the, well, if we can't have it, nobody can have it. And, I tell you, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in eschatology and end time stuff and trying to read the tea leaves and that sort of thing. I don't. But isn't it interesting that this, you know, I don't know if it's the most revered, but it's certainly one of the most revered holy sites for the Muslims. And you know, if you believe what you're told, it's supposed to be one of the most holy sites for Christianity and for Judaism and all of this sort of stuff. Isn't it interesting that Jared Kushner, a Jew, and Mike Huckabee, a ordained Baptist minister, that they're trying to turn it into an interfaith religious site?
Yes. Yeah. Would call that one world religion, maybe? Yeah.
Exactly. Right, Tim. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with that is it does make you kind of take pause and think, well, that sounds scary. It does to me, at least. That's not going to turn out the way I think they think it's going to. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, and we just see there's so many things. I can't get over how much restructuring and how much everything, just like the pivoting of the United States, foreign policy in the Middle East. It's just like suddenly it's changing all around. I mean, it's like everybody threw the whole thing up in the air. We've got people that were on board in the United States that were, you know, getting things calmed down, getting things straightened out over there, and suddenly they're gone, you know. And then we've got, I don't know if anybody else has noticed that, but I've noticed that it's like, really, it's kind of like, I don't know whether you'd call it a 180-degree pivot, but it's definitely a pivot as far as sheer over there going, what happened? I mean, something's changed. There's been a fundamental shift in all of those things. And
quickly.
Go ahead. Be very quickly.
No, and quickly.
Especially for a red tape machine, quickly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bipolar. I mean, you talk about a roller coaster. We're here one day and down here the next day and then back up the next day. You know, and you're right, Tim. You're 100% right. And I mean, let me ask you this. Let me pose this to you. Do you think it's really that chaotic, or is this being done so that the watchers, aren't able to see what's going on? Is it being done as a ploy, or is it really this chaotic?
Yeah, and I don't have any answer. I just know that my guess is, there's definitely somebody behind it planning it. We've got an idea who it is, but, it's one of those, when you look at that kind of stuff, you see just plans within plans, and we've got I mean, I just seen a an NDAA come out, the Section 224 of the 2027 National Defense Act authorization, and basically, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, but basically what that is going to do is designate Israel as a, or the Israelis as a partner with the American military, and that allows them to have all of our technological advancements or assets and resources at their disposal. Everything from AI to pretty much everything. It's pretty much just a, you know, a la carte, free, gratis, what do you need, here you go type thing. So, I mean, doesn't that seem a little bit self-defeating in that region? The more we put into that region, I mean, really, net returns, Peter used to talk about this, to the victor go the spoils. So we don't ever win over there. All we do is spend over there, you know. And, you know, sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. Well, we're sowing the wind with our money and our the blood of our young men and everything else. And it's a constant state of confusion and upheaval over there. Never stop. And there's never any victorious. There's never any spoils out of it. I mean, there's never any. There's nothing. So what's going on there? You know, you have to ask yourself. Obviously, there's no winning. Because if you win, you get something out of it. But, you know, what we're seeing there is just more death, more destruction, more cost. It never stops, and it never has. So, in general and overall, I love the way that they go into the Middle East. They say, well, these guys are friends this week, and these guys are enemies this month. And, you know, and then in 6 months, it all changes around again. It's like somebody shuffled the cards, and now we've got a whole new hand that's dealt to us. And but it never, you know, they just keep playing. You know, they never fold. They never get out of it. If you're looking at it as a card game or something, it's like it never goes away. It's like just, well, we've got an unendless amount of pot money that we can throw into the pot, and we can just keep playing. And it's, yeah, wrong. It doesn't work. It shouldn't work that way. It's not good. It's just not good policy in any way. So, I mean, honestly, my this is just purely my thoughts. I mean, but if we pulled out of the region, it wouldn't be long, and they would either spool out from lack of funds, or they would figure out a way to get along some way or another and unify to some extent, you know, power structure and, you know, everything else. But by keeping everything fractionated over there, you just have a never-ending war. You know, wars and rumors of wars, like the Bible says, it never really goes away.
To kind of just jump right in there with that, Tim, I think what you just so eloquently described, I mean, that's bolstered up by, I think it's in Obadiah and Malachi, where Edom will always be at war. You know, that's what's foretold, that Esau, Edom, you know, they're going to be in a constant state of war. That's what they are. That's what they do. And I think that's the reason why there is no peace plan, right? I mean, you guys stop and think about this. You know, since 1948, when that bastard state of Israel was created, you know, how many named wars have they been in, right? I mean, it's one after the other. Like every decade, they're going through some other armed conflict. It's been Egypt, it's been Jordan, it's been Syria, it's been Lebanon. You know, all of these different countries that are around them, they're at war with. And in every instance, it is land grabbing is what it is. It is an expansion war. It's not a war of aggression where the Egyptians attack Israel, the Syrians attack Israel. It's quite the opposite. And it is being done to steal land. It's an expansionist war. And that is, in my opinion, that is evidence that Scripture is 100% true, because that's what we're told. If you read Malachi and Obadiah, that's where we're at. And I don't know the point I was trying to make, other than, Tim, I think they're going to be at war until they're burning embers, the way we're told in Scripture. They're going to be perpetually at war until they're just a stubble.
Yep. And well, and they've talked about, I think this is worth noting, we talk about who true Israel is, and we talk about those sort of things. But let's talk about Edom for just a minute. They've done some DNA testing over there. It's very suppressed. They sure don't like it when they do it. But those Israelis and a lot of those people, they're all related. I mean, they're genetically the same people. It doesn't really come down along the lines of race. It's more along the lines of religion, if you want to get to it like that. So there's this element that has been introduced over there that is completely, it's a case of perpetual upheaval. And even this expansionism of this land grabbing that Israel's supposedly doing, they never improve on that. I mean, their settlers go out there, and it looks like they're farming a rock rubble farm, you know, in 20 years. I mean, it's like, okay. There's no beauty. They may do a camera moment or something where they make one particular place and hire people to come in and do that.
Propaganda.
But, exactly. But the truth of the matter is it doesn't exist. You know, it's a rock farm. I mean, and that's kind of what we see there, all over there with that element of it. So what's the point? I mean, you know, if you don't need it, part of the reason things are as bad as they are here with these other people coming in, these foreigners and these illegal aliens, is because we tend as a people not to knee-jerk react as long as it doesn't interfere with us, you know what I mean, directly. I mean, if it's like, live and let live. I mean, there's a whole bunch of and I'm not saying that's necessarily correct. I'm just saying that's our nature. There's not this aggressive outshowing of destruction and hatred and violence. But they're not that way. Just the fact that you exist is enough to enrage them and to want to bring about, you know, the total destruction and annihilation of your people or your way of life. And there's some fundamental differences there any way you want to cut it, from the psychological and you know, entomological, I can't say the word. Anyways, racial differences, I guess I would say. But these are undeniable and irrefutable facts that people don't look at. And yes, I know there's other people over there that aren't related that, you know, jump in, but the Bible calls them zealots. So, you know, you have those types. But I think that's what we see over there. I mean, it's going on. So, you know, their goal isn't the benefit of their society and their people. Their goal is the destruction of everything else. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's not, you know, the more they destroy, the happier they get. And eventually, just like a snake swallowing its own tail, they'd consume themselves if there wasn't anything else to consume. So, I mean, wasn't it Netanyahu who said in one of his quotes, and I don't have it in front of me, but America's just a golden calf. We'll chop it up and,
that's right,
and, you know, use it, and it's big enough, we can do it, and we can do it over and over again. No big deal. Well, I think the record speaks for itself if you look at it historically. Anyway.
I just very quickly want to throw something on, because you opened up the box, Tim, when you were talking about the propaganda of Israel and farming. And I just want to throw out for folks, if don't believe what you see, because it's a lie. So when you're shown these postcard images of, you know, these irrigated farms and that sort of thing, that supposedly these Jews have built, when you look at the amount of agriculture that's actually produced in Israel, it does not correspond with the population of that country. And in other words, they are not feeding themselves. The amount of agriculture that is produced, grown, harvested there in that region is not enough to sustain their own population. And what does sustain their own population is the United States, believe it or not, Russia and Ukraine. If you look at the importation of foodstuffs that are actually going into that country, it is very clear and obvious that they are not able to sustain themselves, agriculturally speaking. And what they latch to and they lie about is they like to say they made the desert bloom. And this is a fulfillment of Isaiah 35, 1 and 2. And what that says is the wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly, even with joy and singing. And they like to latch on to that verse from Isaiah as a self-fulfilling prophecy, and look at what we've done. We fulfilled Isaiah. Well, stop and think for a moment, because Isaiah 35 was fulfilled. And it was fulfilled by our people who settled the New Jerusalem on the North American continent. We took the wilderness and we took the wasteland and we made it into the most successful and productive agricultural area that the world has ever known. We feed the entire world, and that's the fulfillment of Isaiah 35, not that little bastard country in the Middle East. I just wanted to throw that
out
there.
I'm glad you did. That was good.
Good point. I mean, it's excellent. Yeah. And true. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they hate us for feeding them. I mean, that's...
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like, wow. So, talk about... I mean, that's how petulant and bitter they are, is they hate... Well, the Bible says they return evil for good, you know, and it's like, yeah, that's what they do. I mean, you take care of them financially, take care of them with food and everything else, and you get your hand bit. Or, you know, they despise you. Is it really
as simple when we look at this and all these geopolitics and all of the countless lives that have been lost over the centuries? Is it really as simple as they are just a scorned people that are angry for losing their birthright? I mean, I say yes.
I think it is. That's what I think. I mean, when you boil it all down, the brass tacks, that's where it's at. You know, they just. And the only element that they have, if you go back into your history and your economic study, is they have set themselves into a position of economic might and leveraged that into some form of control through, what is it? Money is the love of money is the root of all evil. That doesn't mean, and that's what they use. The root, they're the root. And, they've used that to create the environment that we see all around the world in that regard. So.
Well, it is ancient Babylonian money magic that is straight out of the pits of hell. I mean, in John 8, when Christ tells them, you know, you're doing the work of your father. I mean, that is how they've been able to build the wealth and might that they have. In my opinion, is that I think I got to be careful how I say this. I think it is supernatural. Not in the good way, but I think it is supernatural in an evil way that they are able to attain the power that they have, because they're doing it in league with Lucifer, and that is that is how they've been able to exercise the power and control and influence they do have. Once again, that's my opinion, guys, but I think that that is the supernatural warfare that is very real all around us, is they are able to control certain systems that are put in place, that they put in place, and they do it to leverage themselves against God's people as a manner of control. And I think when we're told about the horror of Babylon and to come out from underneath her, that is what's being talked about.
Yeah. I think a lot of the verses in the Bible that talk about things like the borrower being the lender's slave and everything, your Judeo-Christian churches want to make out like that's about kinship relationships, and I don't think it is. I think it's about this. I mean, it goes back into this. They are using. They can't come out and curse you directly. We've seen that clear back in the Bible with Balaam and all of the other things. But what they can do is make you curse yourself or make you unclean before your God, or make God, through your agreement, God says, well, if you're going to make that kind of agreement, I'm going to make you stick to it. You didn't ask me because I told you not to do it. So when you do that, you've placed yourself in a weakened position where bad things happen. And I think that's what we see here all the time. You know, I mean, it's like, wow. So you're in the slave zone because you haven't followed God's rules. So, and you've done things that he told you not to do. So, again, that's not about borrowing $100 from your brother. That's a national thing, you know. So,
I had to look this up real fast. This is just a quick quote from Martin Luther, the great reformer, and this is out of his 1543 book on Jews and their lies. And he was talking about Jews who make their livelihood through usury, and the usury was only being used against European Christians, not against their own people. And he said, I heard it said that the Jews donate large sums of money and thus prove beneficial to government. But where does this money come from? Not only from their own possessions, but from that of the lords and subjects who they plunder and rob by means of usury and off the sweat and toil of the Christian citizen. He went on to say that Christians are obliged to pay additional taxes and let themselves be ground into dust, all for the glory of the Jews. So I think Martin Luther got it.
Yeah, where'd you read that quote from?
That is from Martin Luther, the great reformer. He wrote a book, it was a treatise in 1543, and the name of it is On the Jews and Their Lies.
Okay.
This was a good book. Something that doesn't get talked about a lot. You know, you'll hear the Judeo-Christian Protestant churches bring up Martin Luther when they want to talk about the Catholic Church and how the Catholics get it all wrong, and Martin Luther was a great reformer and the father of Protestantism, but they don't want to talk to you about when he met with those Talmudic rabbis and walked away and said, these people are straight from the devil. And he wrote that book on Jews and their lies, and he then set about for the remainder of his life attempting to rid all of Europe of Jews. No kidding, folks. If you didn't know this, it's real. The father of Protestantism, Martin Luther, he went through Austria and Germany, meeting with every lord and baron that he could, attempting to have Jews removed from the continent. And he was pretty doggone successful. And Henry Ford, the great industrialist here in the United States, he looked at Martin Luther as a hero sent from heaven to help our people understand the evil of the Jews. I highly, highly recommend. You can find that on the internet for free in PDF format. I highly recommend folks read through it.
Yeah, and the Lutherans, they try to, modern-day Lutherans, they try to distance themselves as far as possible from it. You know what I mean? They don't want
Man, you're not kidding like, about that.
Yeah, I've been there. Thought, well, you know, it's like, okay. And he came out of the Catholic Church. I mean, they love to, my personal opinion is, this is just for free, but I would like to say it, is the fact that they call him the father of, you know, Protestantism. But the truth of the matter is, he was joining an already existent group of believers that, you know, it wasn't like it was all new. I mean, there were people out there before him that knew that, but it's very important that the Catholic Church and the Jesuits and everything control that narrative, because they always want to call themselves the church, you know, so quotes. But he just wised up and got out. You know, he jumped out of the toilet before he got flushed. And so the interesting stuff there as far as, you know, and he knew that the reason that he wrote that and got out of there was he figured out how big they were in there taking over the Catholic Church and running that. So
you're talking about the Jews, them, right?
Yes, the Jews running the Catholic Church. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's a topic for another time, but I know my eyes got opened up pretty wide when I saw the connection and started researching the connection of the Jesuit order and the Jews, and realized it was one and the same. And the Jesuit Catholic order is nothing more than Jewish controlled fashion that took over the Catholic Church, or at least just helped take over the Catholic Church. It's pretty, it reads like a book of fiction or something, but it's not. It's reality. And so Catholics, if they're the good Catholics out there, you should probably take a look at that and find out who's really controlling the. It's not a coincidence that the Pope wears one of those little funny hats.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
That's a fact. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Good point.
Yeah.
When he's not wearing, you know, he's wearing that big tall mitre of Dagon or whatever it is, you know. So,
yeah, it's true. This is true. Did you guys see, I know we're getting to the top of the hour, Jason, but we can sneak this one in real fast. We're talking about Europe now, I guess, a little bit with the Pope and the Catholic Church and Martin Luther and all that. Have you guys seen this coming out of what the United States is calling NATO 3.0, where the plan, it's the fundamental restructuring of United States commitments. And they're talking about burden shifting. And pretty much the way I understand this is it says Washington expects the European allies to assume responsibility for the continent's entire conventional defense. In other words, Washington, D.C. is saying that the United States is going to pull out all of their military assets and soldiers from Europe, and they're going to be on their own.
I did see that. And under the new framework, what? Provide a nuclear deterrent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all.
Right.
Which I'm not sure what that means exactly, but yeah.
Right. So, you know, these countless military bases, because you got to remember, since World War II, we've maintained military bases in Spain, Italy, Germany, Great Britain. Which ones am I missing? France. I'm sure I'm missing some over there, but there's a huge United States military presence in Europe. And as a result of this, and this kind of starts going hand in glove when you start thinking about it, because we've been talking for a year of Germany and France and these other countries that are rebuilding their military, you know, that they're They're starting to gun up like they've never gunned up before, at least in our memory. Well, it's probably been known to them that the United States is saying, yeah, we're getting ready to pull out of the con, that we're no longer going to be here acting as your military. And so maybe that makes a little more sense of why there's this emphasis with these European countries to rebrand and rebuild their military. And I'm just throwing this out just because, you know, I like a good conspiracy. How much conversation do you think Washington, D.C. is having with Moscow, Russia on this? Because isn't it interesting that the boogeyman that Europe seems to be afraid of is Vladimir Putin in Russia, and it sure seems like the United States is leaving at a very unopportune time. You know, if we're real friendly with these European nations, it seems like the United States would be hanging around in Europe as a deterrent against Russia, and it looks like it's the opposite, that we're leaving at the beginnings of this tension between the European continent and Russia, and that kind of opens it wide open for Russia, doesn't it?
It would seem that way to me, yeah.
Yeah, so. I don't know.
Although, every time I look at Russia, I can't see it as being it really hasn't. I mean, have they flexed that much? I mean, really?
No.
I mean, compared to what they could. I always say, well, they show great restraint, and I think that has continued. So that's my thought on the whole process. It's like, well, you're not going to violate our borders, and you're not going to do that, but they're not out there doing land grabs against every other country in Europe or anything like that.
They're not bombing ancient medieval crusader castles. And destroying medieval churches that date back to the beginning of Christianity in a region. They're not doing that. So, yeah, you're right, Tim. There is a country that is doing that in that region, and that country is Ukraine, which is led by a Jew. So he's been doing that for the last 4 years of destroying Christian churches throughout the region. So,
observation dictates.
You bet.
It's like, wow.
You bet.
Well, I think we're going to go ahead and take a break here real quick, have a song, and we'll be right back right after the song.
Make him Lord.
and you're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers. Got a good message in here from Derek up in Canada, and it said, "We are not to go along with the wickedness whatsoever, Romans 13, an ungodly government is not to be put up with." Here's what God says. In other words, the enemy has set up a government that the Lord does not recognize. Hosea 8:4. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have made princes, and I know it not. Of their silver and their gold, they have made them idols, that they may be cut off. Isaiah 40:17. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. They, Babylon, are valueless. Good point. Real good point.
Wow. Yeah. Hmm. Well, and going along with that, that kind of reminds me of the fact that, you know, everything else can be in the flesher in our country, but as long as the stock market's okay, why, life is good. You never notice that? It's like the only report that matters is the stock market report. And every time I see that, it's like, how's that an indication of whether you have groceries in the cupboard, or you have gas in the tank that you can afford so you can plant fields, or, you know, different things like that. But, hey, the stock market's good, you know. So, I mean, I don't know too many people personally who really play that. So what magic is that? What, you know, what kind of... Doesn't it make you wonder?
Could it be, Tim, that the same people who control the stock market also control the media outlets? So
very possible.
They want, they want everybody to think everything is good because it's good for them, not necessarily good for us. So that's the way I look at it, at least.
Yeah, you can gather your own straw and make your own bread.
That's right.
But you know, it's great for us.
That's right.
The stock market's good. So as long as you do without, we don't have to. So, yeah. So, one of those things.
Do you guys remember talking about Las Vegas? It was a few months ago, and... The clandestine bio lab that was uncovered.
Chinese dude?
It was linked to a Chinese guy. And if you remember, the same thing had happened in California. Yeah, right. So there was a California incident where the Chinese guy got thrown in prison, but that Chinese guy in prison was operating another bio lab in Vegas. And the, quote, property manager that was in Vegas managing the bio lab was the Israel citizen.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do.
He was the Jew.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and when the raid happened, they went in and found, gosh, what was it, dengue fever and HIV and all kinds of stuff that probably shouldn't have been in a residential house in Vegas. But in addition to that, this Jew from the state of Israel that was managing all this, if you remember, the feds arrested him for like 3 or 4 gun charges. There were weapons in there that he was, you know, in possession of that he wasn't supposed to be in possession of because he was actually an illegal alien from Israel, that he had come over here on a visa but overstayed his visa and fallen off the map because he was managing these bio labs in California and Vegas and apparently, stashing these illegal guns. Well, would it surprise you guys if I told you that this week the feds dropped all the charges and that property manager has been extradited back to Israel, where he's a free man living now in a non-extradition country?
Surprise? No. I mean, that there again, isn't that kind of showing that shift and that pivot we were talking about a little earlier? You know,
yep.
He was arrested. But since he's an Israeli. Yeah. Well, you know, we shifted our stance there. We got to let it go. You know, just stuff to see here. Move along. So,
yep.
How convenient.
This guy's name was Ori Solomon. And He all charges dropped. The feds dropped all the charges and dismissed everything against him and put him on the first thing smoking back to Israel. And that's where he's at now. And I'm going to ask you guys, I mean, you know, because once again, I tinfoil hat and all that. Is it just possible that maybe the reason all this stuff got dropped was because this guy was probably a Mossad agent that was here working? And when it got up to the higher ups, the feds, that guy doesn't go to prison because of what he is. He just disappears into the night and we forget this ever happened in Vegas. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, that was what I thought. I thought that, or it's they just bribed some judge and said, hey, this would be really beneficial to you to drop all the charges and make this go away. And you don't know with these guys. I mean, the bribery is not beyond what they would do. But like you said, the Mossad agent act. What was he doing? I mean, that's the thing. It's like there should have been. I mean, you'd think that we would have had all kinds of stuff come out. It's like, who was this guy talking with? Who was this guy working with? And there has been nothing. I've tried following up on that story several times, and it has been crickets. I mean, there is just nothing to be found out about it. What was he doing in Vegas? I mean, it's the big thing. It's like you don't sit there and have all these a biolab an Israeli funded biolab and not intend on using it. Or is it something that's already been used? Is it something that they have been using? Are they poisoning people? There's just a lot of questions.
Well, a little more has come out too since these cases have been dismissed. Because here's a good thing, I guess you could say, like Freedom of Information Act and all that sort of thing. So when there's pending criminal cases, FOIA doesn't really apply. Open records doesn't apply because it could jeopardize the prosecution of the case and that sort of thing. Well, when they dismiss everything, all of that stuff becomes public. So some inquiring minds there in Vegas, some reporters looked into this, and in addition to the guns, and in addition to obviously the stuff that was recovered from the biolab, the vials of these different diseases, the guy was also in possession of multiple passports in different names from different countries, but with his picture on it.
Jeez. Well, that's like a felony in itself, ain't it?
Yeah.
Well, it certainly lends to itself to this guy. I mean, I don't have multiple passports. I would think a honest, hardworking businessman probably would have one passport. But I think he had one from Israel and one from France. I think the one from France was in a different name. That sure feels like to me that that's somebody that is kind of spooky, so to speak.
Yeah.
Tim, what do you think?
There's nothing secret agent man about that, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
the other thing I thought was interesting in this story was, while I was doing some looking into it, was I found out that the Nevada prosecutor who was overseeing the case against Solomon was Sigal Chadha. She's an Israeli born U.S. citizen. So read that as dual citizenship, I would imagine. That's usually the way that works. She ominously told a reporter in one story that she had talked about, and they used the word ominously, quote, she knows where a lot of the bodies are buried, end quote, politically. So there's no conflict of interest there, is there? I mean, so she was an Israeli-born U.S. citizen. Wow. And then it turned around that a judge ruled last year that Chadha, who is acting U.S. attorney for Nevada, is not legally supposed to be serving in that role. But the Trump administration appealed the judge's ruling, and Chadha has continued operating as Nevada's top prosecutor. So, I mean, somebody up there thought that was a conflict of interest, evidently, as well. So they just haven't.
But the Trump administration didn't.
No.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No conflict of interest there from them. So, which to me again shows the the pivoting of, what do you want to call it, importance or the of key roles. I mean, here not too long ago was ICE, and we need to get rid of all these foreign invaders. And here we have kind of a similar situation. I mean, I'm granted it's a one-off, but you have probably a dual citizenship person in there trying to, at the very least, she should have recused herself from the situation because she was an Israeli born. If she's dual citizen, it's like, well, he probably needed an American, a true homeborn, home-blooded American prosecutor on this case. But, you know, no big deal. So, yeah.
Well, Donald Trump is going to be the next prime minister of Israel. Keep that in mind.
They really like him over there, according to some polls.
They really like him. They really like him over there. So, but, you know, you got to stop and think about this. Put together what we're talking about. So everything we just talked about with that, and then we go back to Mike Huckabee and Jared Kushner, you know, these supposedly two Americans that are working behind the scenes in Israel to completely restructure the Dome of the Rock Mosque and put it under control of an Israeli board, so to speak, and then go back to just a few weeks ago when we were talking about two U.S. Elected representatives that are attempting to change the Veterans Administration laws to extend to Israeli soldiers that fought for the Israeli Defense Forces so that they would be eligible to all American veterans benefits. And you start looking at all these things, and Tim, I mean, it sure seems like there's a pivot, or it's got like they're trying to mash the Israeli government and the U.S. government and blur the lines there where it's just one entity. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? Like, the crossover and the overlapping is becoming more and more in your face.
Absolutely.
Well, and at least in my memory, this is something new. I mean, do you guys remember it being so out and open where Trump was talking about Canada being the 51st state or whatever? Man, it sure seems like Israel is. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
It kind of ties back into that 2027 NDAA, that National Defense Authorization Agreement. That's another one of those melding of two things. It's like, well, you know, it's kind of like they're saying, well, what Israel's basically saying, well, what I've got's mine and what you have is mine too, you know. So yeah, absolutely. I think
It just is flagrant in your face. I mean, that's I guess what I'm seeing more than anything is it's just flagrant in your face. They're not trying to hide it at all.
Well, yeah. What happened to ICE? I mean, we haven't heard anything about them lately. You know, they were all up in the. I mean, there were riots. There were everything else. Is that still ongoing? Is it just not being reported on, or is it suddenly?
It's funny you said that, Tim, because there's been not anything going on at the border for months. You know, and the ICE stuff, as far as I can tell, deportations had just stopped. Nothing was happening. And in the this week, in New Jersey, you started seeing some Antifa action at some ICE facilities up in New Jersey. I don't know if you guys caught some of that, but there was some sporadic rioting going on up there. And all of a sudden, like it was planned, here on the Texas border, we started having an influx of crossings starting on Memorial Day on Monday. It had been dead silent, crickets. I mean, just crickets on the southern border. And this week, there has been several incidents of illegal crossing, especially over in Maverick County, which is Eagle Pass, in that area. As a matter of fact, that was one of the things I was going to bring up and talk about, Tim, is, you know, we haven't heard anything about anything as far as the border is concerned. And just so you guys know, this week there were 12 Chinese illegals apprehended on a private ranch in Maverick County crossing into the United States, and they were all dressed in matching camouflage with rucksacks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, pictures are out there. I mean, that's, this isn't, it wasn't ICE. It wasn't Border Patrol. Just so you guys know that apprehended them, it was the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Maverick County Sheriff's Office down there. There was some private reports from a rancher saying that he had people walking through the ranch, and, the DPS went out and they were able to interdict them. And, like I said, there were, 12. And if you look, I mean, if you find the pictures on the internet, there's one really good picture where the guys are dressed in a semicircle. I did the match because I just wanted to know, if you look at that camouflage pattern, that is the People's Liberation Army current issue camouflage uniform. It is the PLA camouflage that they are wearing.
Safe to say they're insurgent soldiers, right? Yeah, pretty much.
Well, like I said, you take a look at these photos. These guys are all wearing high and tight haircuts. And in my opinion, they are fit young men that look like they're in their 20s or 30s.
Hmm. Yeah. So the invasion has come back.
It is starting to come back. Also this week, in addition to these 12 Chinese soldiers, now I'll go be as bold as saying that because that's sure what they look like. These 12 soldiers that crossed into the Eagle Pass area, they also interdicted Mexicans, Guatemalans, Indians from India, Ecuadorians, and Cubans. In Maverick County. Now, the one that I want to point out there is Cubans. Why would Cubans be coming up through Mexico?
Yeah, no doubt.
Florida is 60 miles away.
Yeah, that's a long way around, for sure.
Yeah, you have to cross the Gulf of Mexico and then come in through like Nicaragua, Honduras, and then travel the entire interior of Mexico to get to Eagle Pass, Texas. That is the long way around. So here is one of the things that made me kind of go, you think there's any chance that those communist Cubans were traveling with those communist Chinese?
I was just going to point out that China and Cuba were allies. So, yeah, I think
right.
So. Yeah, pretty good chance.
Yeah.
They're definitely on the same team, I would say. So, wow. That's just... Well, and it's kind of interesting that they like to talk about the cartels, but there's not always a lot of Chinese, what do you want to call it? Insights into what's going on for illegal aliens over here, but yet we know from past experience and observations that is a continuing issue that's going on over here, you know, wholesale. I mean, it's a pretty big deal. We just talked about the guy with the bio lab, and I can remember a few months back talking about another one where they got caught bringing in some crop, damaging crop.
Yep.
Cultures. And we have a whole bunch of these guys that are bringing in. Well, one thing that I seen the other day was we had a Chinese migrant who doesn't speak English driving he was a bus driver in Virginia, and he wrecked
killed a bus people.
Yeah, mass testing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got, there's just about as many semi-truck drivers out there that are in the same boat as there are Indians from India out there doing their crazy driving techniques in our country and, you know, killing people. So just having those guys in, it's interesting to me how they seek these, I mean, okay, you can't get a hold of a tank, but you can get a hold of a semi-truck or a bus, you know, isn't that, so that kind of sounds like an invasion tactic to upset things. Maybe.
No doubt.
I mean, I just, you know, so.
No doubt.
Asymmetric warfare demands weapons of unusual, you know, you don't think in a straight line, tanks, guns, explosives. Devices. Instead, you're using IEDs, trucks, buses, and things like that. So, yeah, that's the way I look at it. I mean, that's what I see.
I looked it up just for giggles. It's less than 70 miles from Havana, Cuba to Florida. A straight line flight from Havana to Eagle Pass, Texas, is 1,210 miles.
Gee whiz.
Oh, wow.
So that's when you said that's the long way around, that's the long way around. But wouldn't it make sense that you need some Cuban nationals that maybe went to China for further training to act as interpreters when you're bringing 12 guys across the border? Just, I'm throwing that out there, that, you know, they speak Spanish, they know the Hispanic culture, that may help.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, back to military assets.
Yep.
Well, we already know about all the guns and different things like that, and we're still looking around. Like, one of the questions I still have, whenever I see this in the back of my mind that comes to the front, is the fact that where'd all that ammo they bought for the Postal Service and for the, you know, for the Department of Agriculture and all that. Where did all that end up at? You know, millions of rounds here a few years back. Remember that? I mean, it's like,
oh yeah,
that stuff never surfaced. Isn't that interesting? So
I think some of it surfaced, Tim. I think some of it surfaced when it left California in that Ryder truck with those two Mexicans taking it to Pueblo, Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. Very good point. So
yeah. And I think it was going further south. Personally, I mean, I go back, and this is kind of a way back thing, but we're talking about this like it's news. But you know, if you remember back, Pastor Peters and Colonel Moore and Earl Jones, you know, they were telling us that, you know, in their intelligence reports from across the border, all of the same stuff back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
That, you know, there were elements of the People's Liberation Army in Cuba. They're actively training across the border. And I personally believe that our government knows it and in some instances may be complicit in it.
Yeah. Well, and in some cases, they even apparently from some of the, you know, underground, there's some camps even in the United States that exist where they train.
Yep.
And go. So, you know, yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So.
For sure.
Oh, what do you make out of this $40 million in gold bars, $2 million in cash? where do you think that came from? Think they ought to do it on an audit at Fort Knox or something like that? I mean, yeah, it just...
And the Rolexes. Don't forget the 35 Rolexes that the guy had, too. Did you see that part of it?
I did not see that part of it.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Yeah. What we're talking about is the FBI arrested a CIA official this week and in Virginia and in his home was about $40 million worth of gold bars and $2 million in cash and 35 Rolex watches. And if you read into this and find out, what was happening is this guy, it reads almost crazy if you want to believe what you're being told here. So this guy joined the CIA, but apparently faked his entire background. He claimed to have college degrees and military service that never existed, but the CIA took it at face value and hired him, as if we're to believe what is being told to us. And yeah, he became a resident agent in CIA that was working assets. So he was working some kind of confidential informants or assets, either foreign or domestic, I'm not sure. And as a part of working these supposed assets, he had the ability to requisition certain things in order to pay these assets. And I guess, Jason, what he was requisitioning was gold bars, Rolex watches, and large sums of cash. And it turns out that he wasn't working any of this. That, you know, this was all made up, and he was just simply enriching himself. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's
it's just a weird story.
It is a weird, weird story. And I look at this, and, you know, I get it. I've talked about this with a couple people this week, and they're like, man, what was he going to do with all that gold? And what was he going to do with all those? I said, yeah, I hear you, but how in the world did the CIA miss this? Like, how did this guy get a job?
Right.
Yeah, that's a full faith moment.
Oh, yeah. You know, no background check. I mean, it's the freaking CIA. They can't verify a DD-214 form from the military? The real story to me, don't get me wrong, that's a lot of gold. And like you said, Jason, how does the CIA have access to that kind of gold? Where is that coming from, you know? And
Well, it made me wonder, too. It's like if it happened here in this situation, it's like how many more? I mean, what else are they what else is going on over there at the CIA? I mean, handing gold bars out?
Who are they paying in gold bars?
Yeah. I wonder if this guy's if his job's open. Maybe I should apply for it or something.
No kidding.
My question is when was the last time you've seen any CIA operatives charged for anything in the national news, let alone a senior, their word, not mine, CIA official? And I have to ask, this guy's name is David Rush. I was pretty sure that everybody who worked with the CIA had the last name Lynch. But, the truth of the matter is I'm not sure. I'm not even sure that, you know, this may be a, what do you want to call it? I don't know that it's a red herring, but it might just be.
That's what I think.
It might serve ulterior motives compared to what we're thinking about. So as far as what they were paying with gold, I mean, the CIA is, they operate on foreign soil only, but so if there was payment going, that might happen. With gold, I mean, a lot of those guys don't want American currency, you know. But the whole thing's just kind of stinky to me. I mean, I don't see you just don't see the CIA with dirty laundry in the news. It doesn't happen. I mean, they may disappear somebody, they may whatever, but most of those kind of situations are handled, I think, in-house and undercover. So. The whole thing's just weird. It has a strange smell to me. So I don't think we have that much transparency with the CIA. So
I think it's a red herring. I think I do. I think that this is. I mean, we're talking about it. I think it makes for a great story to divert attention. Is what I think. You know, because well, just because of that. And I don't know. I mean, I may be all wrong. This guy may have just been a rogue actor and was able to bilk the CIA out of a lot of stuff. I don't know, but it sure doesn't feel right to me. Like you said, Tim, senior CIA agents don't get arrested in perp walk. It just doesn't happen. And that's what's happening this go around. And I don't know. It just feels contrived. It feels contrived.
Yeah. I have real doubts about it. The other thing is, it could have just served as a way to make $42 million and 35 Rolexes disappear somewhere else. You know what I mean?
This guy's
the fall guy for it. So, but I don't have any proof of that. There's just a thought. I mean, it's like, yeah. But I'm like you. The simple fact that the background check was, it's all fraudulent. That's weird. You know, it would be more in line with the things that they do to go ahead and read him in and make his credentials all right. But those guys don't run, a lot of those guys don't run real credentials, or, you know, they're black hole guys anyways. They don't have, I mean, they've changed background stories so much, they don't even know what their background story is a lot of times. So,
are you saying, Tim, that they may have multiple passports, like in different names from countries like France?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of things there. So, you know, this is just, this is, I think we're just seeing the tip of something else here that serves their interest, not anything else. And he may even have been a legit CIA operative that did check out all right, but maybe he did run off with $42 million worth of assets and a bunch of Rolexes, and so they threw him under the bus. I mean, that's another possibility, but, you know, this is a message to other guys who would try to bilk us out of something.
Well, you would think they'd come out and say something like he was selling secrets, or he was a plant, and he was, you know, doing something. But just the way that they put out all this information, it's just like nothing makes sense about it. It's just a weird story. It's just, I mean, you know, oh yeah, he was
a weird.
We got him on falsifying time cards. He had so many hundreds of hours in overtime, and he was discharged. And falsifying timesheets is what they officially charge him with. I mean,
think about this: if you're smart enough that you've devised this devious plan on how you're going to bilk $40 million worth of gold and $2 million worth of cash and $1 million worth of Rolexes out of the CIA, are you going to leave them in your house?
Yeah, that's what it's like. That's what the other thing. It's like, you have that and you're going to, you wouldn't have it in your house. No, the guy's smarter than that. I mean,
he should be.
Should be.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. If I'm not going to say me, if Tim was going to do this, I think Tim would figure out you don't leave that at your house. That's the first place they're coming. You know, you got to put it somewhere else.
You leave it at Jason's house.
You leave it, yeah, right. thanks for not saying real thing.
We got a caller on the line. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. Hello, caller.
Good morning, man.
Morning, Kevin.
Hey,
morning,
Kevin.
Morning, Tim. Morning, Will.
I'm taking it to Kevin's house. If I steal $40 million.
that gold was heavy. A gold bar must be really, really heavy. I don't know what they would weigh, but it would be a lot. In following these stories today, one thing I want to bring up, did you see where there's a bill in Oregon to stop all hunting and fishing?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that one next, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, and when I saw that story, I thought, okay, I saw a couple things that came. Somebody sent me some memes or something like that, and I thought, oh, yeah, whatever. This is, you know, well, I didn't believe it, that it was real. And then I started looking into it, and it's like, no, this is a real bill. They got the signatures, and they're going to vote on this. I mean, it was just crazy. And it's what we're talking about is controversial new law to completely ban all hunting, all fishing, all castration, all of slaughtering of animals, you know, slaughterhouses. In the state of Oregon. And I thought that it was, it was just insanity. But then you think about it, it's like, well, you know, it's an insane world. And it's like, I guess it does make sense that they would try to do something like this in a state.
Well, Oregon's been that way for so long. A couple firsts, aren't they into euthanasia? They're into the first place where people could walk in public naked. You remember that?
Yep.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All places, you know. I mean, things to do. I worked with some guys out in Montana, and one of them was telling me about him and his wife. They went to a rest stop, so they walked around naked. I mean, oh, gross. just insane. Animalistic.
Well, yeah, and then what they did with those, the protest, and just, I mean, basically, they just gave them part of that downtown Portland, and it was a free-for-all. I mean, they could do whatever they wanted in there. I mean, it basically any drug that they wanted to do, and I think that they were supplying needles for the druggies. I think they probably were supplying the drugs, too.
Yeah, they probably were. Yeah. I think it was around 63 or 64 we went to Portland. Boy, it was a beautiful city then. It was.
I've been to Portland many a times. I mean, I don't even know how many times. And it went downhill a lot in the last 20 years.
Portland, yeah. You've changed. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
And they had some museums and some science stuff there, and just some really, really neat stuff that I really enjoyed. But, yeah, well, no more.
Portland,
I had a friend of
Portland
mine.
Was the.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jason.
Well, I was going to say, I had a friend of mine that ended up moving out of Portland. He was in outside of Portland, but he was a truck driver and would haul those waste transfer container trailers, semis, out of Portland. And when he finally left, there was just a guy that he worked with was driving a semi truck, pulled up to a stop sign, and somebody just got out of the car and shot him through the chest and killed him. And they were having shootings. I mean, it was all of the trash truck drivers and the semi truck drivers that were affiliated with this guy that I know were carrying guns. I mean, they were armed to the teeth to go into Portland, and that's how bad it was. And he just said he'd seen shootings after several of them. And after his buddy got shot and killed, he wanted to get out. So he took an early leave and took off and got 1,000 miles away from Portland.
Wow. Goodness. Yeah.
I'm betting California hopes this doesn't pass so that they can be the first one to pass it. You know, I mean, you know, they're probably jealous.
Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah, right. I got a prediction that the Oregon will become the mountain lion capital of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, it was It is. I stopped and visited a friend in Drane, Oregon, and he had, I can't remember what these gigantic dogs he has, huge, because took care of his sheep, and he had to keep all of the goats, that's what it was. He had to keep all the underbrush cleared everywhere around his house, and he had the goats doing that because mountain lions were just threatening him all
right.
the time. He couldn't walk out the door. I got on to the subject about South America. Anyway, the growing Israeli foothold in South America, three new battlegrounds, is just one of the places I started reading about. But they've been trying to colonize Bolivia, Argentina, Chile, and Brazil. And it goes back a long ways, like about 100 years.
Those Jews just won't let the Germans have anything, will they, Kevin?
Oh, no. I mean, it's a massive front. And they are getting some political kickback, especially from Chile. But what's that gentleman's name?
Which one?
Mili,
the Argentinian. Argentinian Prime Minister. Malay is his name.
And they're calling it a pink tide of governments once allowed with, anyway, but it's always hooked with the United States and so forth. And they're really trying to, they want places to have, but one country's worried about them taking over their water supply. I can't remember which one. I read so many trying to get prep for that, but I can't remember them. And lastly, I want to mention Hal Turner. They attacked his donor box. He only asks for donations the last week of the month. He has no advertisers or anything. His 5-day-a-week show. And they've taken away his donor box he's had for about 25 years. The very day he started to ask for the monthly donations, he found out that they cut him off. They cut off his donor box. And he only has until tomorrow, the end of the month, to get enough money. But he has lawyers fighting it. He's taking them to court, but it'll be a slow process before he even gets any kind of results like that. So he may be off the air Monday, and that'd be a real loss. I mean, his background in intelligence and everything. So I'm praying for him. I want other people to pray for him in the long run. And he's been attacked, and it's from you know where. I'm sure of it. I'm just satanic attack, and led by the bankers, etc. I don't have a lot more than that, but thank you for the broadcast again this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for listening.
Always. So I'll let you go, gentlemen.
All right, you have a good day.
All right.
Thanks, Kevin.
Come on. You're welcome, all of you. Bye.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, and it's as easy as that. The phone number to call in, if you'd like to call in, we got about 15 minutes left, is 970-224-4203. I don't know. You know, a lot of crazy stuff, but that Oregon one was like another weird story. It's like, oh my goodness, this can't be real. I thought it was something like from the Babylonian Bee or some kind of satire, and it's like, really, this is really real. And just crazy.
I got a question for you guys, because I think Tim, I know you were keeping up with this, and Jason, obviously you are too. Does this apply to private property?
Yes.
Yep.
It's across the board. Yep. So it's not just public land. So if I own 300 acres and I got a stream running through it and a bunch of.
Yeah, you can. If you have a herd of cows, you can't castrate them. I mean, it's an animal cruelty law, and can't castrate it, can't butcher. You couldn't butcher a deer. You couldn't butcher one of your cows. From what I understand, is that the way you understand it, Tim?
Oh yeah, basically any interaction with animals is forbidden. I mean, the stuff I was looking into early on, it could be construed to. They were actually talking about the fact that swatting a fly in your house would be a criminal act. I mean, you're not allowed to interact.
Oh, good gracious!
In any way, I mean, you can't own pets. No dogs, no cats.
Well, I was just about to ask that. Can I keep a dog?
No. I mean, it basically makes a separation between what they call, animal life and people. You're not allowed to, you couldn't, even to the point of like feeding a stray cat is considered a criminal act because you're altering natural situations. So, I mean, it's really wide open as to interpretation, but what it would basically do is, it's like, well, you don't have any rights at all. The animals have all the rights. It's total insanity. And I think this goes back to my personal opinion. It's a finger in the face of God because of the stewardship.
Yes.
And it's also a total destruction on our food, infrastructure. They want chemical meat. They want vegan, non-violent people. They want all these other things. And according to the New York Fed, I mean, this was posted May 29th, but according to the New York Fed, 14% of U.S. households are now experiencing food insecurity, which. That doesn't sound like much, but this is America we're talking about, land of the home and the brave. And food insecurity is, and these aren't just people on welfare or on food assistance. This is everyday Americans are struggling with this as far as, and if you run it up to just, if they bring it down to just families with children, the number rises to 17.5%. I suspect these numbers are quite low because if you go back to some of the other economic indicators, they were talking about the fact that I don't remember the numbers, so don't quote me, but it was like 48%, I think, of Americans, or 38%. It was well over a quarter of the population are buying groceries on credit, with credit cards. And whenever you see that, that's a major indicator because that's food insecurity. People can't afford to buy food. So, you flex the credit card because you got to buy groceries. So these things ought not to be that way. I mean, food has never been an issue in the United States. I mean, I can remember during the one of the things my grandfather said during the 30s, he said, well, we didn't have any money and things were really tough, but we always had food. You know, I mean, yep. He was a farmer, but he's like, we always had food. That's a mistake that it would seem that the powers that be that are engineering this, they don't want to be that way again. You know, so we're seeing a direct, and this plays right into that, don't you think? I mean,
sure. The people who raised me, they were products of the Great Depression as well. And what you're talking about, Tim, as far as, you know, there was always food. I know my grandfather, he spoke regularly of, you want to talk about eating off of the land, you know, that they fished every creek, and it wasn't for pleasure and fun. You know, it was for supper, you know, that, yeah. That's right. You know, and you take away the ability, or you criminalize the ability to use the resources God has given us to sustain ourselves. I view that as a crime against humanity. I really do. I look at that as the natural resources that God gave us stewardship over. It wasn't for recreation. That's certainly, you can find recreation and pleasure out of hunting and fishing and that sort of thing. I enjoy it, but I'm one of those guys that I look at it as a responsibility given to me from God, and I really do provide for my family, you know, out of my hunting and that sort of thing. And it sure seems like the fragile food system that you're talking about, Tim, that this is a major effort in the state of Oregon to make it even more fragile. I've never done it, but I sure have read a lot of stories of, you know, people fly fishing the Columbia River and elk hunting and that sort of thing in eastern Oregon. I guess all of that just goes by the wayside, huh? Because it's not just, you think about all those outfitters, guys, those guys who make a living, guiding these hunting trips and guiding these fishing trips. I guess they just no longer have work.
Pack it up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, Tim, I think it's a good prepper tip of the week, what we're talking about. The statistics that Tim was just giving about the food insecurity and that sort of thing is, and once again, we talk about this. This is not out of a spirit of fear or being anxious or whatever. It's just the world that we live in. And I think there is going to continue to be a spike in diesel prices and that sort of thing. And as we've talked, everything runs on diesel. I don't care what facet of industry it is, you can tie that back to diesel and coal. And when diesel goes up, the can of tomatoes is going to be more expensive at the grocery store. That's just the way that works. And if you can, while it's still available, it's a great time to, you know, buy an extra can while you're at the grocery store and put it on the shelf. I don't know. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. And I think that, like you said, I think the prices are just going to keep getting higher and higher and higher. Diesel prices are going to continue to rise, energy prices, and it's just going to cause everything else to go up. And right now it's like, you know, I know that there is, you know, people are cringing when they go to the grocery store and trying to do that, but I still believe that we ain't seen nothing yet. And those prices have not, they haven't skyrocketed yet. And I mean, you go and whether you're buying, you know, I was looking at the price on, you know, organic canned corn at the grocery store the other day. We got a little, it's not a mom and pop health food store, but it's fairly large. They got quite a few of them in the area, you know, in Colorado. And, they had organic canned corn for 99 cents a can, on sale. And if you buy 12 or more, you got it was an extra discount on it. And to me, it's like that was cheap. And cheap and inexpensive and something you can put on the shelf. And there's still deals on stuff and stuff still available. And, you know, it goes not just with the food, but, I've seen, in a couple different stores, and I always like to look at the ammo section, and ammo, 22 ammo is the, yep. All the shelves are filled. There's plenty of 22 ammo out there. And I think that, I think that that's going to get hit in the future again. I think we're going to have another ammo shortage like we had in the past, and 22 ammo is going to dry up. So if you want any 22 ammo, I'd pick up a couple extra boxes of it. And the prices aren't bad, I don't think. I mean, what do you think?
They're as good as they've been. I mean, probably better. Yeah, and it's available.
If you adjust for inflation and stuff, it's like, I mean, you know, I mean, what was a couple years ago? I mean, a brick of 22 was going for $100 if you could find it.
If you could find it.
And, right. Yeah, I mean, and you're talking $40 now for good stuff. I mean, that to me, that's you know, they've made a lot of these bricks smaller and stuff, but still, it's like the times that we're living in, and with everything that we've had with inflation, I think that's a pretty darn good deal.
Yes,
there's a big fancy word called cognitive dissonance, and the idea behind that is what you're describing, Jason, and I've had it recently happen to me too, where people say, yeah, $6.99 for a box of CCI Mini Mag. I remember when that was $1.99.
Right.
And I remember that too. But I also remember when gasoline was 98 cents a gallon, and this was still America. So, I mean, you got to put it in perspective of that was then, this is now. It's only going to get higher.
Yes.
You know, so if you're waiting for it to go back to being $1.99 a box, that's never going to happen. Those days
you're
are gone.
Do without.
And it's only,
yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right, Tim. And that applies to everything, guys. Whether it's that can of corn or a box of 22 shells, it's never going to be back what it was. And that's depressing. I wish it was, but we have to live in the reality of you get it while you can. Because it's only, you know, I had a guy tell me this week real fast. He said, we were talking about, of all things, we're talking about chicken feed, and he was complaining about how much a bag of chicken feed was, and he said, surely it can't get any higher. And I said, well, sure it can. I said, sure it can. You know, that you might as well, as I said, you know, everything is going to get higher, man. I said, that's just the way it is. Our money is failing and the price of production is going up. It can get higher. And the same thing applies to that 22 ammo you're talking about, Jason. So my opinion is if there are things that you need in your pantry, if there's things that you need in your ammo locker, don't wait. Do the best you can, what you can afford to do, because it's only going to get more expensive.
Yep. Yeah, you have to prioritize your needs and
that's right.
Move on from there. So
that's right.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know. I guess that ties in with the prepper tip of the week. I bet that makes sense to me. Well, we are out of time. Closing thoughts?
Just keep a positive attitude.
Yeah. There you go. So, I was going to say, this is the day that the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Don't let the world bring you down. We serve an almighty God who has our best interest at heart. And we need to understand there's a perfect finished plan, and the enemy wants us to believe that there's not. They want us to live in chaos and strife, and that's not the God of order that we serve, and we should all remember that.
Amen. I think that's a good one to go out with. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
You bet.